Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka. Text number 11. Madhu Bhoja Dasharharha, Kunkurandhaka Vrishnibihi. Atma tulya balar guptam, nagar bhagavatim eva, madhu bhoja dasharharha, kunkurandhaka vrishnibihi, atma tulya balar guptam, Nagar Bhagavatim Iva Madhu Bhoja Dasharharha Kunkurandhaka Vrishnibihi Atmatulya Balar Guptam Nagar Bhagavatim Iva Word for word, please repeat. Madhu.
Madhu.
Bhoja.
Bhoja.
Dasharha.
Dasharha.
Arha.
Arha.
Kunkura.
Kunkura.
Andhaka.
Andhaka.
Vrishnivini. By the descendants of Vishnu. Atmatulya, as good as himself. Balai, by strength. Guptam, protected. Nagai, by the Nagas. Bhagavatim, the capital of Nagaloka. Iva, like. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. As Bhogavati, the capital of Nagaloka, is protected by the Nagas, so was Dwarka protected by the descendants of Vrishni, Bhoja, Madhu, Dasharha, Arha, Kukura, Andhaka, etc., who were as strong as Lord Krishna. Purport. The Nagaloka planet is situated below the Earth planet, and it is understood that the sun's rays are hampered there. The darkness of this planet, however, is removed by the flashes of the jewels set in the heads of the Nagas, the celestial serpents. And it is said that there are beautiful gardens, rivulets, etc., for the enjoyment of the Nagas. It is understood here also that the place is well protected by the inhabitants. So also the city of Dwarka was well protected by the descendants of Vrishni, who were as powerful as the Lord, insofar as he manifested his strength upon this earth. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Om Maganatimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Melitam Jana Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Kuroti Vasalam Pangun Nagaite Gurim Yakripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurun Dinataranam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in this purport here, Prabhupada has given a description of Nagaloka. you know, the planet of the celestial serpents. And such a wonderful description. It's very wonderful how that all through Srimad Bhagavatam we hear about amazing descriptions of other planets within this universe. Or not even within this universe, but other universes, and also even, of course, the spiritual world. You know, we hear about beautiful descriptions of Mount Kailash on Shiva Loka. We hear about on Brahma Loka, the residents, they don't even have gross bodies. Their bodies are made of purely of intelligence. You know, we hear about the amazing descriptions of Jambudvip in the fifth canto. You know, how there's mangoes the size of mountain peaks. You know, and they fall from trees which are 800 yojanas high. So how many miles in a yojana?
Eight.
Very good. Yeah, so there's eight miles in a yojana. So that's 8 times 800, which is 6,400 miles high. That's how big these trees are, with mangoes the size of mountain peaks. And when these mangoes fall from the trees, they break open on the ground, and then whole rivers of mango juice flowing down. It's very amazing descriptions. You know, sometimes when we hear these descriptions in Bhagavatam, that are very much beyond our whole sense perception and ideas about life on other planets or descriptions of other planets, it can sometimes challenge our faith. Now, so we have to ask ourselves some questions like, you know, why is my faith challenged? You know? Actually, I think the question should not be like, you know, why should I believe this, you know? But it should be like, why don't I believe this? You know, from my own personal experience, like, what's given in Srimad Bhagavatam is the most easy to understand, comprehensive descriptions of the universe and the planets contained within the universe that I've come across, and I'm very satisfied with hearing it. So one actually has to approach Bhagavatam, or approach to hear knowledge, you know, with a little bit of humility. That actually, maybe what I've heard from other sources is not correct, and that actually maybe I don't know everything there is to know, and maybe Srimad Bhagavatam does have something of value to offer. You know, so we have to understand, where is Bhagavatam coming from? So Srimad Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Srila Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under the expert guidance of his guru Narada Muni. This is Srila Vyasadeva. He had just finished compiling the 18 Puranas. Six of those Puranas were to assist those people predominantly under the influence of the mode of ignorance, to elevate their consciousness to the mode of passion, at least. And then six of those Puranas were for living entities predominantly under the mode of passion. And so the other six Puranas were for those who are predominantly under the influence of the mode of goodness. But after compiling the 18 Puranas, Srila Vyasadeva, he was still not feeling satisfied with the work he had done. And therefore, Narada Muni, he became present when the disciple is in distress, despondent, then the Guru manifests. And so Narada Muni instructed Vyasadeva that, yes, you still haven't compiled that literature which just purely glorifies the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna Bhagavan. So Srila Vyasadeva, you know, being an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, he is certainly does not have imperfect senses. In the second verse of Bhagavatam, it is explained, Dharma prajita kaitavo cha paramo nirmatsaranam satam vedyam vastava matra vasta sivatam tapatra triangulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimvapare Ishvara Sajo Vritya Virutya Te Trikatibi Shushushubish Tachanat. That Dharma Projita Kaitavo Chaparamo, that it completely kicks out all cheating religions. Those religions which are materially motivated. You know that, so they have some material gain, ulterior motive behind them. So it completely rejects any other materially motivated religions. It is tapatrayan mulanam, that it is for the welfare of all living entities. You know, that means that it is absolute knowledge. That knowledge is for the welfare of all living entities, can only be absolute. Which means that it is free from mistakes, if it's for all living entities. And it uproots the threefold miseries. So we know what the threefold miseries are. Adiyatmaka, Adidaivika, and Adibhautika. And so Adiyatmaka, the sufferings that come because of the mind and the body. Adibhautika, the sufferings that occur due to the other living entities. And then there's Adidaivika, the miseries that come from disturbances hurricanes, earthquakes, tsunamis, so natural environmental disasters, if you like. So when one becomes free from the threefold miseries in life, that means that they're out of the bodily conception of life. That means they're free from illusion. So Srila Vyasadeva has perfect senses. He has no imperfection in his senses. There's no cheating. We've established this kicks out any kind of cheating religions. It's free from mistakes because it's for the welfare of all. And it is free from illusion. No? Therefore, it is not tainted by the four frailties of the conditioned soul. You know, and is therefore called apurusha. You know, it's not of this material world. And finally, this knowledge, it establishes love of God within the heart of all living entities. So there's three authorities where we can seek transcendental knowledge from. There's the guru, there's sadhu and shastra. You know, whatever the guru and sadhu say, it should be directly in line with shastra. Shastra has the final word. You know? And whatever is in the shastra should be spoken by guru according to time, place and circumstance, kala desha patra. So there's a famous verse in the Svetasvrata Upanishad, yasya deva para bhaktir yata deva tata garo tasya te katitar yata prakashante mahatmanah, that one who has implicit faith in both the Supreme Lord and the Guru, all the imports to the Vedic literature are automatically revealed. There's a wonderful story in Chaitanya Charitamrita about Lord Chaitanya. He was he spent 6 years touring South India, and he went to traveling to various places of pilgrimage, and he went to a place called Rangakshetra. And in Rangakshetra there was one brahmana who was illiterate. You know, he could not read properly, and his spiritual master gave him the instruction to read the whole Bhagavad Gita every day. And when he used to read Bhagavad Gita, you know, he would mispronounce the words, you know, and sometimes he'd hold the book upside down, you know, and the people, other people would laugh at him for this. You know, so when Lord Chaitanya went to Rangakshetra, you know, he saw this brahmana, and he saw how he was trying to read Bhagavad Gita. And he noted that, well, this brahmana is reading Bhagavad Gita, but I see that he is manifesting so many ecstatic symptoms. So many symptoms of love of God are manifest in his body. Like tears are flowing from his eyes, you know, his hairs are standing on end, his body is shivering. You know, so Lord Chaitanya approached the brahmana, and he said, My dear brahmana, you know, I see that you are experiencing such love of God. Can you please tell me which part of Bhagavad Gita, you know, are you relishing so much? And the brahmana replied, actually, you know, I cannot read Bhagavad Gita, you know. I'm illiterate, you know, I can't understand the words. Sometimes I mispronounce the words. And so Lord Chaitanya inquired, okay, so what is it then that gives you so much joy? And the brahmana replied, you know, when I see the picture of Lord Krishna and how beautiful he is, you know, driving the chariot of Arjuna, and when I see Krishna instructing Arjuna, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, it brings me so much happiness, you know, that tears come to my eyes. And Lord Chaitanya said to the brahmana, you are the authority in reading the Bhagavad Gita. You know, actually, you have understood the real purport of Bhagavad Gita. And I said, because this Brahmana, he had faith to follow the instructions of his guru, that his guru blessed him with Krishna praying, that he'd be able to understand the essence of Bhagavad Gita, even though that he could not read Bhagavad Gita properly. You know, there's a few lessons in this pastime. One is that having faith in the instructions of the guru, no matter what material qualification we have to execute that instruction, that should be secondary. Another lesson is that although one might not have such good material qualification to execute the instruction, that doesn't mean that one shouldn't try to develop, you know, that qualification. Like, we can either take it to one extreme to the other. Like, for example, like Prabhupada, he said that, okay, we're not Sanskrit scholars, you know, but we should try our best to pronounce the Sanskrit nicely, you know, for Krishna's pleasure and for preaching. You know, so we can say, oh, Prabhupada said we're not Sanskrit scholars, so, you know, maybe don't worry about it, you know, just pronounce how you think, you know, it sounds, you know. But, no, we should try to develop. There's a Sanskrit pronunciation guide in the back of the books, you know, and we should take a little bit of time to practice the pronunciation, see how the letters are pronounced properly. And it's very pleasing to Krishna and Guru if we do that. And then we can take it to the other extreme, that actually, yes, we should try and pronounce everything perfectly and just focusing on the Sanskrit. So we have to understand the reason the purpose behind, you know, learning the Sanskrit. Yeah, there's some caste Brahmins in India still who are very proud of their expert pronunciation of the Sanskrit language. And because of this, they think they know Krishna. But we know from Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna says, I'm understood only by devotional service. Bhakti mama jananti yavanyas chasmi tatvatam. You know, devotional service is given by a guru. So actually, one can only understand Krishna through the mercy of the guru. Guru Krishna Prasada by Bhakti Lata Beach. The guru gives the seed of devotional service. So we should understand that whatever the spiritual master, whatever the guru is giving, is coming straight from the spiritual world. I'll give you an example. It is stated in Bilvamangala Thakur's Krishna Karanamrita that on the full moon night of the month of Sarat, deep in the forests of Vrindavan, Krishna is standing in his tribhanga, in his threefold bending form, you know, playing his flute. And the sound of his flute, it travels through the air and enters into the ears of the gopis. Now, and as we know, in Krishna book how when the sound they hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they drop everything. You know, they say, Krishna's calling me, I have to go. You know, they some of them are feeding their children. You know, they stop all their household duties, you know, and they just run into the forest. Some of their family members try to stop some of the gopis, and it's said that they sit down and go into samadhi, and then they go in their spiritual bodies to see Krishna. So the gopis, they run into the Vrindavan forest to see Krishna. And when they reach Krishna, it is described, Bilvamangala Thakur describes that when the rasa dance is just starting, the gopis, they raise their hands in the air, exhibiting various movements. You know, you've seen how Keshava Prabhu dances? Yeah, with various mudras. That's practicing for Goloka Vrindavan. the gopis, they manifest, they exhibit various mudras. And then they place their right foot in front of their left foot, and then their left foot in front of their right foot. And there's maybe Johnny, stand up. Yeah, come on, stand up. Johnny, come on. Come on, stand up. Come on, Johnny. Come on, stand up. Yeah. Okay, so put your hands in the air. I put your right foot in front of your left foot, and then back again, and put your right foot, left foot in front of your right foot. Yeah. So what is this called? Swami step. Exactly. So we should know. You can sit down. So, thank you, Johnny. So this is. So what Prabhupada has given us is coming straight from Goloka Vrindavan. He's actually preparing us, you know, from when we get back to the spiritual world. You know, so when we enter into the rasa dance, you know, we won't be thinking, oh, what kind of moves should I bust out? Is it the salsa or the waltz? Or the, you know. So we'll know exactly how to act, we'll develop these transcendental qualities, we'll know how to dance with Krishna. So, one must have firm faith in the process of devotional service, and that is as it is given in the Shastra and is taught by the Guru. And that way, one becomes purified of any unwanted qualities or envy that one may have. And that way we can actually understand the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, nirmatsaranam satam, that this Bhagavad Purana is only understood by one whose heart is completely free from envy, the Paramahamsa. Okay, so I'll stop there. Is there any questions or comments or anything anyone would like to add? Yes, ma'am.
Well, you want to tell us something about those jewels on the roof, had the serpents, and they
I'm no expert on the residents of Nagaloka, but it's very wonderful description, isn't it? Maybe I'll read this again. The Nagaloka planet is situated below the Earth planet, and it is understood that the sun's rays are hampered there. The darkness of this planet is, however, removed by the flashes of the jewels set in the heads of the Nagas, and it is said that they are beautiful gardens, rivulets, for the enjoyment of the Nagas. Yeah, so, yeah, like it says, that the darkness is removed by the flashes from the jewels. Yeah, that's how they're able to see.
Must be very powerful.
Yeah.
The lights, the angels. The other side of the story is that these snakes can be very dangerous and poisonous, vicious. I'll give you an example. I heard. I was in Adelaide in April, 3 months back.
In West.
5 months back. In Adelaide Temple.
Oh, yeah.
And one devotee told me this story, and it's almost a first-hand information, because his father died because of a vicious attack of a snake. Well, how it happened that he was a very rich man. He had a lot of properties, land, like farming. So he went to his field early in the morning, because some people wanted to have some lease of the land for agriculture. So he reached the field around dark. It was winter, dark night. So early morning when he reached, it was completely dark. And one very vicious snake jumped on him. And he is giving a description. It was about 4 feet long. And very strong. And then he bit so many places with his face, his head, his body, and the person was almost dead because of the venom snake, the venom of the snake. And early morning when it was a good night, when it started, then some friends, those people who wanted to have the business, they came. And when they saw this man, they immediately took him to the hospital. When he went to the hospital, they said, it's too late. We haven't got the anti-venom serum. So the friend said, what do we do? Yeah, he was almost in unconscious. Breathing was very slow, almost slow. So somebody says that we should take him to the snake charmer, because that is the only alternative. The hospital says we can't do anything. He'll probably die in a few hours. So they take his snake charmer, and that charmer gave some mantra, and he could get up. And very healthy fellow. So heart and everything started working. He came back. So the moral of the story is that there are both sides of these snakes. Very vicious. They will bite you without any provocation.
They're naturally envious.
This was a very vicious. It must be some enmity from previous life. That's how he really took so much pain, so many places he was in. So you have to be careful about that. Thank you.
They've lost a few cows in New Govardhan because of snakes.
Cows.
Yeah. Like King Brown's. Anyone else have any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am. Sorry?
Yes. bastard actually took him. They actually not understood that the emotions are higher than the knowledge. And we can see that from in Nectar of Destruction, one of the verses is that when they were making relation who is higher according to the knowledge they had. But then once you get to the certain level, it's how much emotion you have. And it's always says in Nectar of Devotion that that the achievement, the perfection of sadhana is to achieve bhava, the emotion. It's not to achieve the perfect knowledge. The knowledge can help you discriminate and everything, but you know, we can see in the higher realms, the higher levels, they have the emotion is more important than the heart. Also, that example is in Brahmanas, you know, how we are performing sacrifices, they were expert in chanting mantras, everything, but when Krishna asked them, they didn't do because there were so much, oh, I have to do this, I have to do that. And that is the whole point, is to please Krishna, not and you have to have that emotion, but because the Brahmana ladies, they had emotions, and they were more surrendered to Krishna. So it doesn't mean that you have knowledge of surrender to Krishna. You have to have really emotion.
But also coming from our conditioning that, you know, we have to develop those emotions with knowledge. Otherwise it will just be based on sentiment.
Yeah, that's how it grows from knowledge. You have to have this as a good. Knowledge is not the ultimate.
Yeah, that's right. Knowledge is not the ultimate. Actually, look at the residents in Vrindavan. They don't even know Krishna's God.
But they can come to the stage of knowledge.
Anything else? Kansara Shima Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanandi.